I found a number of practitioners don't give that migraine enough cred as something that imposes significant disability on that person's lifestyle. And they say, you know what? Your autoimmune disease is much worse. Put up with your migraine. And I don't think that's a very satisfactory answer either. So I encourage my patients to gently push back on that and say, I understand my autoimmune condition is a problem, but my day in, day out functional disability is greater with these headaches and this migraine that you've generated. Sometimes that will ring true to a practitioner, and you'll either adjust the dose or you'll change medications.
The complex relationship between autoimmune diseases and migraine was one of the most popular talks we've done. It really hit a nerve with so many people in our community. Many of them also struggle from rheumatoid arthritis, Lyme disease, Sjögren syndrome, anemia, and lupus. We want to understand the link between migraine and these conditions and how to manage both. So, backed by popular demand, is the sequel interview with the very same expert, Dr. Peter McAllister. Dr. McAllister, welcome back to the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back, Carl.
You enjoy solving neurological mysteries. What are these exactly?
The brain with, nearly as many neurons as there are stars in the galaxy is highly complex. And then if you throw in the rest of it, the spinal cord, the peripheral nerves, and the muscles, there's just lots that we don't know yet.
And does headache come up frequently as either a primary or a secondary symptom in these mysteries?
Yeah, because headache is just so common. If you look at, to get into the immune disorders, everyone that I know lists headache of some sort in the list of possible symptoms of that particular condition. There are a few that migraine-like headaches are the prominent feature. So, yes, we know that inflammation in and around the brain causes headache, and we know that autoimmune diseases are an inflammatory state. So putting the two together is not a big leap.
So, for the benefit of those who didn't see your talk last year, or for those who just want a quick refresh, let's recap some of the key points about autoimmune disorders. What are the most common ones?
So when we have a foreign invader into us, which happens all the time, our body then goes after it, attacks it, and then makes an antibody response such that if they see it again, they go after it even more efficiently. So that's why we have this immune system. It keeps track of who we've gone after in case they come back. Occasionally, because nothing's perfect in this world, our immune system has a glitch in it, and we think that our own tissue is foreign. And we think we're doing the body a favor by going after our own tissue. And when that happens, we call that an autoimmune disorder. Now, the way we've lumped them, which probably will be modified at some point, is kind of based on the tissue. So if we mistakenly attack our brain tissue, an autoimmune attack on our brain tissue, that's multiple sclerosis. An attack on our joints and connective tissue, that's rheumatoid arthritis. If it attacks multi-systems, including the kidney and the skin, that's lupus. So it's a mistake, it's a miswiring of a system that we need to survive.
And how does migraine affect your autoimmune disorder?
It gets back to a more fundamental question, doesn't it? I mean, what causes migraine, right? And that's really evolved over time. As you probably know, years ago, migraine was thought to be a vascular disorder. The blood vessels were the bad guys. We've now discovered the what we call the neural-based theory. That is, that the process starts in the brain, it then turns on pain receptors around the brain. Mind you, the brain is completely insensate, right? You can't have a migraine in your brain because the brain doesn't feel. It turns on all the peripheral pain receptors around the brain, in the meninges, where one gets meningitis, in the jaw, the eyeballs, the sinuses, the nose, the upper neck. All that pain information then loops back into the brain. So you've got this feedback cycle. Okay, two things. One is, when you're in the face of that pain response in the meninges or elsewhere, part of what's happening is a profound inflammatory component. So there are a release of all sorts of inflammatory bad guys called cytokines and interleukins and prostaglandins and leukotrienes. So part and parcel of migraine, we know, is an inflammatory response. Secondly, we say that migraine begins in the brain, and that's probably true. It's a better hypothesis than the vascular theory. But if you take a step back and you fundamentally ask, what causes the brain to generate this process that we call migraine? It may well be that there is an inflammatory component, perhaps an autoimmune-based inflammatory component, that drives this nerve or neural process in the brain that then leads to pain and leads to inflammation in the tissues surrounding the brain. So a more perhaps modern hypothesis that we're getting to, beyond the old vascular hypothesis or blood vessel, beyond the purely neural or nerve tissue hypothesis, is that something is turning on the brain to begin this process. And many of us believe that that is an immune or autoimmune phenomena.
What are some of the early symptoms of an AI disorder?
Well, it kind of depends where it starts. Again, we've been using sort of the tissue-specific diagnosis. If one has rheumatoid arthritis, which can present even in childhood, but it's more common in young and middle-age folks, it's joint pain, swelling. If it's lupus, it's a rash around the cheeks called a malar rash. Kidney dysfunction, joint inflammation, both lupus and rheumatoid can affect the nervous system. We've mentioned the headache part of it, but it can cause other things, even strokes. One of the other common things that we see is fatigue. Autoimmune diseases are associated with sometimes rather profound fatigue out of proportion to the energy that you expended that day. Persons with migraine disease are much more likely to have fatigue than matched controls. And they often report that during the migraine, which makes sense to me, but they report it at an increased rate in between the migraines too. So now we're trying to even take a step further back and say, what is the fundamental underlying pathophysiology, right? What is causing this whole thing? And that's where this idea of autoimmunity and or inflammation, because there are concepts that your listeners probably know, mast cell activation syndrome. People who have this mast cell, these inflammatory cells that are released and they get hives and all sorts of other things, are much more likely to have migraine. People who have autonomic dysfunction, people who have something called POTS, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, are much more likely to have migraine. And some cases of POTS, or this autonomic dysfunction, what it means is they have fatigue, exercise intolerance, they tend to have rapid heart rates, and they faint. Well, migraine sufferers are three times more likely to faint in their life than non-migraine sufferers. Again, many of my patients, particularly young teenage girls and young adults, have both this postural tachycardia, this POTS, and migraine. So it just gets, like many things in medicine, it gets more intriguing and more complicated the more you know about it.
It sounds like there's a lot of work still to be done just to explore the relationship between autoimmune disorders and migraine. And like with arthritis, you can have your garden variety arthritis where it sort of flares up and it's sort of inflammatory driven. But then there's also a type of arthritis that is driven by an autoimmune disorder. Do you think that could also be discovered within migraine, that there could be subtypes of migraine that are driven by autoimmunity issues?
That's fascinating. And I think, yeah, you could certainly be onto something. Whether you're a lumper or a splitter, I think makes a difference here, because the first arthritis you talked about, osteoarthritis, the other one that you referenced, rheumatoid arthritis, you can either look at them as two completely different things, or perhaps they're more like a gradient. And we might find that in migraine as well. We don't think, for example, we don't know this for certain yet, but we don't think that post-concussion headache is inflammatory or autoimmune. You get whacked in the head with something, you get a headache, you're manifesting symptoms very similar to migraine. In fact, we often call it post-concussion migraine. I personally don't think that's an autoimmune disease. I think that someone who is strongly genetically wired for migraine, who has multiple family members with both migraine and autoimmune disease, that person may well be driving their migraine as the starter, the match that lights the fire, as an immune phenomena, but it just presents phenotypically the same way a post-concussion migraine would, right? So it's fascinating how going back to what is the cause, because if we can figure out the cause, we can figure out, you know, how to best treat it. Along those same lines, you know, what's on everyone's top of mind these days? COVID. We see a whole lot of post-COVID folks, and I will tell you that headache is very common in what we, you know, commonly refer to as long haul syndrome, but now it's called PASC. In my mind, that is certainly an autoimmune condition. And if someone has a whole host of other symptoms, we generally use autoimmune medications without a whole lot of scientific evidence, mind you, because it's so new, to try to downregulate the immune attack that we feel is causing the headache.
Does the quality of your immune defenses affect how likely you are or your vulnerability to an AI disorder? And by AI, I mean, I'm just shortening autoimmunity.
Yes, it's both the quality and then just the genetic roll of the dice the moment you were conceived. Just like we all have different eye color, hair color, heights, et cetera, you get what you get in your immune system. Now, there's some evidence that perhaps in the very early years that can be modified a bit. So if you're exposed to a lot of things early in life, you might have a little more robust immune system than one who is totally isolated and protected. So there's definitely that. We get our genetics, and we know now that there are some genetics that are much more associated with autoimmune conditions than others. And you can't help that, right? Just like you can't help the genetics of migraine. Someone with migraine, 70% of the time is a family history.
How are AI disorders diagnosed?
Well, you know, generally after the presentation, whatever the trouble is, someone either recognizes it or it's recognized by others and they're sent to a specialist. The way it works around me is that somebody has, say, inflammatory joints or a particular rash or whatever. For my particular specialty, if someone comes in with numbness and tingling and their eye nerve is inflamed, they come to a neurologist, we diagnose multiple sclerosis. So it's, you know, in medicine, it's a bit of a lost art, but you always listen carefully to the patient and you do a very careful examination. Then you get your tests.
And how is an AI disorder typically treated?
There is a spectrum, not only of the different types of autoimmune diseases, but their severity. I have some patients with autoimmune diseases who are absolutely diagnosed clinically, blood tests, et cetera, but they have very mild conditions. Well, they may just need a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory on the few days when things act up. So that's the very benign cases. The moderate to severe ones, we then introduce things that downregulate the immune system. Because you can look at autoimmune diseases this way. We have an immune system that we need to survive, but a few of the immune cells or classes of immune cells go rogue. Right? They start doing things, they mess around in areas they shouldn't mess around, again, thinking they're doing us a favor. If we blast the immune system, well, we take care of the rogue characters, but we also make ourselves immunodepressed, and then we can get viruses, infections, and all that. The sweet spot is to find medicines that work on the rogue bad guy immune cells, but still keep us with enough immune system. So the biologicals that we're using more and more, these monoclonal antibodies to treat immune disorders, are getting better and better at striking that deal, knocking out the bad guys, but leaving you with a robust immune system so you can take care of foreign invaders.
Can a serious infection cause an AI disorder? You mentioned before how some people that have long COVID, it's almost certainly a type of AI disorder. Can that be the cause? And can that also lead to migraine?
I think so. We know that people who have occasionally benign infections in most of us that we would take and we would clear with our immune system, sometimes we develop an immune response to those and they attack particular organs in our body. I remember years ago rounding in the hospital and seeing a young woman on the heart transplant list afterwards. And she said, well, I had the flu and the virus went to my heart and it caused an immune reaction in my heart. And now my heart's not working and I need a transplant. So we can see that. The other one that comes up, and this is much more controversial than it needs to be really, is Lyme disease. We think, but we don't have solid evidence yet, that some folks who have what they term, you know, chronic post-Lyme syndrome, we think that the bugs, the spirochetes that cause Lyme, are long since gone. I mean, the antibiotics are pretty effective against them, but the immune system is still reacting. And this, so therefore you can hypothesize Lyme comes in, the body fights it, Lyme and antibiotics perhaps to make it go away, but now we've induced an autoimmune condition. And we find in my post-Lyme patients, headache is unbelievably common. Headache and fatigue and joint aches, right? Doesn't that all sound very autoimmune-y?
Yeah, exactly. What should people with an AI disorder know about COVID-19?
Well, if they are on very potent immune suppressants, for example, if someone's going through a bad flare of things, we use our big suppressant, which is steroids, either prednisone tablets or even intravenous steroids. Steroids on the immune system is not a smart bomb like some of these biologicals I mentioned. It's a cannon. Steroids suppresses the entire immune system. And if you're on prolonged steroids, you have to be very careful of COVID. Now, interestingly, one of the things COVID does acutely, not long-term, but acutely, is a tremendous inflammatory response, and therefore steroids can be used acutely. But being on steroids was all, would also predispose you to getting it. It's come up a lot. Should my AI patients receive a vaccine? And the answer is overwhelmingly yes, because they would be at risk, given their altered immune system, perhaps for a worse outcome. And there's no reason to suspect that the vaccine is going to do anything bad to them, you know, despite a whole host of noise out on the internet. It turns out that by and large, even in the small groups that we've looked at of folks who have autoimmune disease, the vaccines tend to be safe. And if you look at having COVID with an immune disorder or having a COVID vaccine with an immune disorder, and you have to make a choice, it clearly favors the vaccine.
Lydia, who's a viewer from our community, would like to know whether the thyroid can affect or cause migraine and if there is any links with an over or underactive thyroid and migraine.
Yeah, this goes back many, many years. A friend of mine up at Harvard named Gil Spearings found that hypothyroid, low thyroid, even just slightly low, can not only cause migraines and other headaches, but it can worsen someone who has a headache condition. Hypothyroidism is very common. Levothyroxine, the replacement, is the most commonly prescribed medicine in the world. So that's a thing. On the other side, you have hyperthyroidism. That's an overactive thyroid. Well, that's often an autoimmune condition. So we find if you look up Hashimoto's, Graves' disease, et cetera, and look at symptoms, headache is listed right in there as one of the common symptoms of having overactive thyroid. So it can go both ways.
Talking about treatments, last year at the Migraine World Summit, you said that you can take a biologic treatment like the CGRPs for migraine and a biologic for AI at the same time as, you know, so both both treating each of the conditions separately. Is that because they both target very specific molecules that are different and don't overlap?
With the CGRP monoclonal antibodies, which have been just wonderful for our migraine patients, they don't work on the immune system at all. All they do when injected is find either this inflammatory bad guy in migraine, CGRP, or the receptor it binds to, latch onto them to prevent the propagation of pain, but it has nothing to do with the immune system. In fact, they're engineered not to work on the immune system at all. So you can be on Remicade or any other biologic for an AI condition, and you can comfortably do a CGRP shot, no problem.
Charlotte had a question about what medications should be avoided when treating migraine or an autoimmune disease that could negatively affect the other.
There's some classes of things to avoid in migraine. Certainly things that that cause, you know, a dilation of blood vessels. So there's a certain blood pressure medicine that does that. Often it triggers migraine. Some folks who take medicines like Cialis for erectile dysfunction, the effect that that has often leads to migraine, but it's really on a case-by-case basis, really. As far as autoimmune diseases, you just have to be careful that if you're on an immune-modulating drug, or if you are on one of the biologics, you have to check with your doctor for certain medications. So for example, some of our immune patients who are on some of these drugs can't take live viruses as, for example, as a shot. So you, if you wanted a shingles shot, you have to take the one that's not live because your immune system may not be able to handle live. So other than that, we've gotten better with our drugs. They're much safer now for both autoimmune conditions and for migraine than they were a generation ago. So there's a little less to worry about as about specific drug-drug interactions.
Ruth asked if there were any treatments for migraine that are also helpful for arthritis specifically.
Well, certainly, you know, not a great long-term drug, but the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories can take care of both migraine and the pain of rheumatoid arthritis and osteoarthritis. The downside with the frequent use of nonsteroidals is two things. One, there's a boxed warning on all of the medicines like ibuprofen, et cetera, that they could lead to gut irritation or even ulcers. And if you use them long enough, they slightly increase your risk of having a clot, such as a stroke. So they're to be used in most folks, unless you have to use them daily, they're rather infrequent drugs. The other problem is, for reasons that are still not completely clear to us, specifically to migraine population, if they take too many nonsteroidals, they can still have the stomach or clotting issues, but they can also increase the number of their migraines. And we call that medication overuse headache or rebound. So the numbers that have been worked out in a very large study suggest that 15 or more days a month of taking a nonsteroidal, which works for both conditions, would probably increase the number of migraines and should be avoided.
Lupus medication was mentioned by Catherine as one example of a medication that causes headache, which we just spoke about earlier. If you find that an AI medication causes headache in someone who has migraine, how do you manage that?
Well, it's, you know, you've got a number of ways to do it. The first thing is, if it causes headache up front when you first started, if you can encourage the patient to stick it out a bit, the headaches often will wane. So sometimes you tough through it. Secondly, you can go back to the prescribing doctor and say, this is causing a terrible headache. Can we try something else? Now, again, there's always a nice talk at the Migraine World Summit on the stigma of migraine. And this is sometimes where it rears its ugly head. I found a number of practitioners don't give that migraine enough cred as something that imposes significant disability on that person's lifestyle. And they say, you know what, your autoimmune disease is much worse, put up with your migraine. And I don't think that's a very satisfactory answer either. So I encourage my patients to gently push back on that and say, I understand my autoimmune condition is a problem, but my day in, day out functional disability is greater with these headaches and this migraine that you've generated. Sometimes that will ring true to a practitioner, and you'll either adjust the dose or you'll change medications. The last option, which is perhaps the least appealing, but let's say that autoimmune drug was phenomenally effective, the only one that was effective, but it generated migraines, we'll treat the migraines. So it's odd to think of using a medicine to treat the side effect of a medicine, but sometimes we have to do that. And again, now that we have safer migraine medicines, the gepants come to mind, these new class of drugs that have proven efficacy in studies and a wonderful tolerability profile. We can use those with a lot of safety in patients to treat the migraine generated by an AI drug if we can't get them off it.
You spoke earlier about the inflammatory link between AI disorders and migraine. What's one of the best ways to reduce inflammation? Is it, we know that we spoke earlier about NSAIDs, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. Those are acute medications, so we can't use those on a daily basis forever. Is it just, does it just come down to behavioral and lifestyle factors like sleep and diet and movement and exercise?
So, you know, pending finding some wonder drug that does it all for us, yes, I think that we have to take the locus of responsibility and put it back on ourselves. And that's very hard to do, even for me, even for all of us. We sometimes don't take care of ourselves as much as we should. I also think that Western doctors don't often emphasize the lifestyle and psychological factors enough. You know, we know, for example, that obesity is a strongly pro-inflammatory state. So, you know, I address increased body mass index with all of my patients who have migraine and autoimmunity. Oh, and by the way, just to further tie things together, we know that BMI, elevated BMI, is also a risk for chronification of migraine. Maybe the pro-inflammatory state, getting back to that overlap, is contributing to that condition. We also are just on the, just scratching the surface of the thing that we all kind of know, but we have trouble wrapping our head around, and that is psychological factors, the immune system, the pain system. We haven't really gotten fully there yet, but we know there's a real tie in there. And again, not to keep knocking my specialty, but sometimes we are you know, good at diagnosing and giving meds, but we need to take a step back and say, what's going on with your stress? What's going on? Are you, do you have depression, which probably is some sort of pro-inflammatory state? The thing that we don't ask enough about that's been well worked out in chronic migraine is childhood trauma and physical, sexual, emotional abuse, neglect, all predict a chronification of migraine.
When should someone see a doctor for an AI disorder?
Well, I think that, and again, this would apply to migraine too. These are chronic disorders with, again, variable phenotype. There's mild, moderate, and severe of anything. If you have a very mild condition, you might want to have it diagnosed, but I don't think you're obligated to do anything. Unfortunately, the bell-shaped curve is biggest in the middle, so most folks will have at least moderate disability. They need to be followed by doctors. They need to make sure that the disorder does not become destructive before it's too late. For example, rheumatoid arthritis is an inflammatory process, but it can lead to, with time, joint destruction. And we don't know how to get that back yet. So I think that if you have at least a moderate severity, migraine or AI, close follow-up with a doctor who you trust is essential.
Are there any final thoughts that you'd like to leave with the audience?
I think that we're only on the cusp of that step back, bigger picture question of what is migraine really? You know, we use the term migraine, which again has a pejorative connotation because we think of migraine in a negative aspect, but perhaps we need to rename the whole condition, you know, as a dysautonomic, autoinflammatory, nociceptive processing disorder, and think of some little acronym for that, because that would, you know, further let us figure out what it is and why it is, let us find medicines. For example, do autoimmune medicines work on migraine? They may, for some of them. And would also do a lot to erase the stigma that's associated with migraine.
Where can people learn more about you or follow your work?
Peter@neinh.com is my email. I welcome emails. You can follow us on Instagram at Headache Docs, D-O-C-S. Those are probably the two best ways to get in touch with me.
Well, we'll link to your previous talk on this subject, which was so popular, in the show notes below. But thank you so much for joining us back again on the Migraine World Summit.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.